Hi, ladies. I'm Dr. Brooke, and welcome to the Women Strong Podcast. Women Strong is an online women's wellness program that covers the foundations of health through lessons, exercises, daily challenges, and live interviews with female experts on a variety of health topics. Women Strong also provides a supportive community of like-minded ladies who encourage one another toward improved health and vitality. This podcast is a collection of excerpts from some of our Women Strong live interviews. We are so grateful to all of our experts for sharing their wisdom with our community. These strong women have taught us so much, and we're thrilled to share their expertise and wellness tips through this podcast. If you'd like to hear the complete interviews, or if you'd like to be present on these live Zoom calls with our experts, then sign up for the Women Strong membership at womenstrongtogether.com. We can't wait to meet you and begin supporting you on your wellness journey. Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Women Strong. We are very happy to have a special therapist with us today, Maggie Tibbetts, and she is here to speak with us about grief, and in particular, grief as it relates to this holiday season and what comes up for people with grief around the holidays. So Maggie, thank you so much for being here and
thanks
welcome.
For having me. Yeah, it's good to be here.
Thanks. We're happy to have you and to talk about this really interesting topic. So can we start with you introducing yourself and telling us about your practice and your journey to specializing and what you specialize in?
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, so I'm a therapist in private practice. It's hard to believe, but I've been in practice for 25 years, which is crazy. I know, doesn't seem like it should be that long. And I've just over the years, you know, developed different specialties, like I think a lot of people do, some of it based on personal experience. So I work a lot, mostly with adults and with mood issues, life transitions. I work a lot with mindfulness and spiritual kind of existential interests that people might have. For grief in particular, I came to this very personally after going through a really challenging divorce about 12 years ago. And I had a lot of support at the time and a lot of personal work under my belt, but I felt like I just didn't have what I needed exactly to work with the grief I was experiencing. So I actually stumbled on this thing called the Grief Recovery Method, which was super helpful and a really supportive process in my own grief. And then I went and got trained in it and then started working more directly with clients. And one of the things about this approach that I really appreciated was that it didn't just talk about death, and this is one of my key points kind of segueing into it, is that grief and loss is something that we all experience with all kinds of situations. You know, I think in the grief recovery method, they talk about something like there's 45 different losses we can experience in a lifetime, you know?
Wow.
And when you start looking through that lens, it's really just how life happens and things change, you know? And so we don't use the word grief unless it's associated with death. But I think one of the things I've tried to work with different clients is normalizing the feelings of grief and loss that can come up around any of the big transitions or changes that we can go through. And I think it's confusing for people because these are often things that are supposed to be happy, you know, like retirement. That's a huge one. It's a big thing, like, oh, it's the best thing, you're retiring. But my clients, you're retired. Yes, it's good. And it comes with a loss of identity or a loss of purpose or a loss of structure, or a loss of their community that they relied on every day when they went to work. And so I work a lot to educate people and normalize those processes. It can be, you know, it can be moving. A divorce, you know, is a huge one. That's what I really realized. And all kinds of things can be considered a kind of grief or loss situation. Getting married even, you know, having kids, you're letting go of your old identity, you're moving into something different. And so I just think it's really important to expand our definition in a way.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
I was talking about that yesterday with a patient of mine, how the grief when someone's still alive, you've lost someone maybe to mental illness or in a divorce or what, addiction, whatever it is, it's almost a harder death because they're alive.
Yep. I think that's so true, Brooke. That's such a great point, is that, and that's even with divorce, you know, I've had some clients say when they're getting divorced, I work with a lot of single moms, it's like, it would have been easier if you just died. You know, it's like, oh gosh, that sounds so, you know, alarming. But yes, when a person's still with us and yet we've lost them to something like addiction or, you know, divorce or illness or even health changes, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, if someone has a partner who's got dementia or Alzheimer's, they've lost that person.
Yeah.
And yet they're still here. So it creates a lot of confusion, I think, for humans. You know, we have a lot of ideas and misconceptions about grief and loss, I think.
Yeah. Yes. And you reminded me of the research around mental health issues and these transitions in life. And I love how you pointed out the positive ones, like I'm probably going to mispronounce that questionnaire, but is it the RAHE questionnaire, R-A-H-E, that lists like getting married, getting a job promotion, getting a divorce, having a medical illness. And the research shows that people are more likely to develop mental health symptoms or full-on conditions in the months or years following these big life transitions. And you think like, oh yeah, having a baby, it's, you know, that's I've wanted amazing. This for so long. Or, you know, even like if you have no expectations around having a baby, and that's one of the things on the list too, like having another child and the change in the family dynamics. I mean, these things are blessings and they cause stress.
That's right. That's right. And it's so hard because we get so focused on the blessing part of it, which is great, but I think it doesn't allow for the truth of people's experience.
Yes.
And I think that's where it gets tricky. People come in, we internalize these expectations over a lifetime.
Yes.
And we're told how we should experience these things. And then when we don't experience them that way, people then judge themselves or are hard on themselves.
Great segue into the holiday season.
Yes, exactly. Right. Yes, thank you. Right. So that's the rub, right? Here we are at the holidays and we're supposed to be merry and happy and, you know, be all in, and we're just bombarded, right? I mean, bombarded. It's just, I think it's just sort of making room for it might be the holiday season and here's your true experience. You just lost a parent to death, or somebody's in a nursing home for the first holiday, or, you know, somebody's in treatment over, you know, or just you've gotten divorced and this is your first year without your kids. I mean, just trying to normalize again that experience. Like, of course you're having a hard time, you know, and trying to support people in finding that balance between giving space and time to those feelings and finding ways to express them and get support for them. And then also finding ways where they can to find little moments of what would feel good, you know, what is nourishing, what is going to be soothing. A lot, you know, I do work with a lot of clients with death, and a lot of my clients who've lost loved ones and are facing, usually the first holiday is the first, they often want to leave town. So I really encourage that. Yeah, like just go to a different location. That's okay. You know, there's no rule that says you have to stay and, you know, be in the same place.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of, it's just the dissonance that so many people feel around like stressful situations and then the expectations of the holidays. Because they're supposed to be happy and they're supposed to be merry. And oh my gosh, the pressure is, and it seems like it's getting worse.
I know.
It's almost like the harder things get, the more Christmas amps up.
Yes. I want to ask you about anniversary reactions and grief reactions and things like that. That, I mean, I know you mentioned the first holidays after a loss, like divorce or someone dying, but it seems to me like that would never go away.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. It's not that it ever goes away, but what I've seen in my practice is it gets less acute.
Yeah.
Yes, every holiday, of course, there's that, you know, missing of a person or missing, you know, your divorce, missing that intact family sort of fantasy. I remember the first year I was divorced. That's the other thing, is that things can kind of come out of nowhere that are surprising. I remember the thing that really got me was I was getting all these Christmas cards with all these intact families. And it just got to be too much. I was like, enough, I get it, you know?
Yes.
Like, I felt like I was the only one sending out a card with just my kids, you know? Mm-hmm. And so, yes, I think it can happen every year, but my own personal experience and then other, just watching other people, it's the most intense with the first year.
Yeah.
And then really, truly, the most intense is when the loss happened around the holidays.
Yes.
Yeah. I just, my heart really breaks for people who have significant, like a, you know, a partner dies on December 23rd, you know, because then, yes, that is forever twined together, right?
Yes.
So that is really hard. For folks where it didn't necessarily happen around the holidays, I've seen it not be quite so acute. And then it's more working with like, oh, how do you honor this person or honor this loss in what way, you know, when the holidays do come around?
Yeah.
Like making space at a table, because it's so much that sense of presence and absence. Like the person's still around, but they're not. Mm-hmm. And how do you, like our human brains aren't really designed for that. To hold both of those things.
Yeah. How do you balance not getting too triggered, but also honoring them, you know?
Right.
And everybody, I'm sure, is different. Like if you think about a family sharing stories of the lost one, like it might be triggering for one and it might be just what the other one needed.
That's right. It gets very complicated. And I think you're bringing a really good point, Brooke, that's also in my notes of every situation, every loss, every family is so different and so unique and so personal. And again, there aren't really rules or maps for it. And yeah, I mean, I think if families can communicate with each other and try and do their best to see what's supportive and find their own journey as well as together, that's the healthiest version, right? But that is hard for sure. And, you know, in terms of like what you said, not getting too triggered, it's like, I don't know if people can resist getting triggered. It's more like you're going to get triggered and you might get triggered by things you don't see coming. And so let's talk about ways, what you can do when that happens. Who can you call? What can you, you know, what's going to take, how are you going to take care of yourself through that?
Our favorite question at Women Strong is what tips can you give us around
right.
this topic?
What
yeah, we like action steps that we can get started with today.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I think for, yeah, so I can move to kind of the action points or things, you know, ways to cope. And I think one is just truly just acknowledging it and letting it be true, you know, just naming it, making it explicit, normalizing it, letting the feelings be here, naming the feelings. You know, some people, when they have a big loss, if they don't have a lot of emotional sort of muscle building that they've done or capacity, it can really take them down because they've got to start to develop that capacity to get through it even or to learn to work with it. So just acknowledging is, so, I mean, I know that's always the, you know, first step, right? Admitting it's there. And then I always encourage people to find like small moments or times to express it, to find ways to either journal or talk to someone or, you know, being part of a group can be very useful because then you're not alone. That's the, I didn't really say that, but that's the other piece about grief and loss that can be so hard, is it's very isolating. It can be, and very people feel very alone in it. You know, they're brokenhearted and they're moving through the world, and at Christmas I think it's even harder because it seems like everybody's happy. And then you
Which
add
is
social
not true.
media. It's not
Sorry.
true. No, it's not true. Right. And then you add social media, right? That just creates all that comparative judgment. And then we're all sort of in the weeds with that. But yeah, so you know, being part of a group or finding some like-minded people, you know, Pathways Hospice does great things around the holidays for people who've lost people to death. Just so it does, you don't feel so cut off from the rest of humanity, like you're alone in this, because you're not. Nobody is, you know. And then, you know, trying to be mindful going into holidays that it's going to be different. And then what boundaries need to be maybe set? You know, what being mindful about what do you want to do and what really isn't going to work this year or years to come, you know. I noticed, yeah, in my first year of being divorced and maybe the next couple of years, I didn't really want to go to parties. And, you know, being single, and it just didn't feel nourishing. So I just didn't. You know, they weren't going to be fun for me. Let's be, yeah, and then being clear, how do you want to celebrate the holiday? What, like leaving town or, you know, finding friends? I always encourage people to make plans no matter what that looks like, because being alone on that day is just not a good idea, for sure. And people are usually cognizant of that. Anyway, like that's sort of a natural movement.
Or even if you are alone, having a plan, right? Like, I'm going to take a
Right.
walk in the
That's
morning,
right.
and then I'm going to call so and so.
That's right.
And
Watch a
then,
movie. I'm gonna watch this particular movie and give myself some good food. Or yeah, if it really comes down to the you're going to be alone and there really isn't a better option. Absolutely right. That's a good point. Structuring it, not kind of letting it happen.
This reminds me of a, if I can jump in for a second.
Yeah, please.
I had this awesome project I created during, I felt during my residency with my tiny little group of outpatient folks I was working with, but it was for the women, it was be your own boyfriend, which
Oh, I love that.
I was super psyched about. Apparently, it was already written because my supervisor was like, you need to write that book. If that doesn't exist, be your own boyfriend, BYOB, you need to do
Yeah.
it. But it existed at that time. But anyway, but this whole notion of like, be your own Santa or be your own partner and love yourself and nourish yourself through the holidays, like, that is where
Yeah, I
it's at.
love that. That is awesome. Yeah, that's a great idea. I've not heard of that actually. Be your own Santa.
I just made
Be
that one
your
up
own
too. Maybe
elf,
that's
right?
the book. Yeah, be your own elf. Now,
Right. You could write it for the holidays specifically. Be your own Santa.
it's ironic because I'm Jewish, but yes,
That's okay.
I do love Christmas. I have Christmas
Yeah.
envy, and I
Oh.
love Santa and elves. And this is okay. I'm gonna stop talking now. So back to you and
I
your
love it
tips.
too. I love it too. I kind of have tweaked it over the years and made it almost like, you know, the time of year, you know, winter solstice and sort of more the pagan version of it because it's a little bit more acknowledging the darkness and the, you know, that notion of hygge. I don't know if you're being cozy and pulling in. And I think it's a Norwegian or Swedish term. It's wherever it gets cold and dark in the winter, they came up with this concept of hygge, where you just focus on being cozy. So, yeah.
And hugya makes me think of hug ya. Is
Yeah,
that
I know. Just be your
hugging
own hugger,
myself?
right? Give yourself a hug. Yeah, so that's a good segue into the other action, really, is radical self-care. It's like, I know we preach self-care all the time, but it's almost like in this time of season with grief and loss, it has to be really radical, and extreme, even in the sense that, like, you know, I like to take baths, but that particular time after my divorce, I took a bath every single night, like every single night, you know? So, whatever people find nurturing, soothing, and it can be, and distracting. It's like, it's okay to distract yourself. There's no rule either that you have to stay with it at all times, you know, to be grieving well. So,
Wow.
There's a great book. I don't know if you know this woman's work, but she's great with grief. Megan Devine's work. Do you know her work? It's her book is It's Okay That You're Not Okay. It's a
Great
great book.
title.
Yeah. And she has some online stuff that's really useful, that's community oriented and writing based. And she just put out another book, like a more of a workbook called How to Carry What Can't Be Fixed.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She's done some really great. She's a therapist, and then her partner died in an accident. And so she wrote the book after that about how so much grief support just didn't feel supportive. It just felt like platitudes.
Oh,
And
wow.
I didn't mention that, but that's another thing. We're not a great culture for grief. We don't want to stay with hard feelings. We want to, if I had a nickel, help me move on, help me get over it. Why am I not over it yet? I should be over it. And that's just does so much more damage than just letting people learn. It's nothing you get over. It's you learn how to carry it, and it's not fixable. And we're a culture that likes to fix,
Oh, yeah.
you know? Right.
You can't
So.
bring something back or bring somebody back. Yeah. Can't fix.
Can't fix it.
Let's go
And
through.
that's hard for our psyches, so especially around the holidays. And then creating new traditions, it's sort of a, like if you, it sounds kind of trite, but it really is important to find new ways to kind of celebrate or be with the holidays and even refashion them to suit us rather than feeling so swept up in the expectations and the way the media and capitalism tells us we should feel this time of year. Families might be having different experiences, and each person is having a different experience. And so I think one of the just having that awareness, I think, is huge. You know, just recognizing that, of course, that's happening and that's really normal. And then for you to have people that you can talk to that don't have a horse in the race
That's
is
true.
really important. And then that gives you an outlet and a place to get your support for what you're going through. And then you can be a little clearer maybe when you're with him, like able to bracket or have processed your stuff. Because I hear that you want to be there for him. Like you want to, if he's struggling, you know. And then if you know there's other people that are having a similar experience in your family as you are, if it's okay to talk about that and just share your feelings or what you're struggling with. So you are, you know, there is some shared experience. But truthfully, like with a divorce, almost always with a divorce, there's a difference. There's everyone has their story about what happened, why it happened, how, you know, how
So
it's going to
true.
go forward. And there's just, we have to make peace with different narratives because we want our story to be the true story, you know? And it's just not, it's never going to happen. I've never seen it happen. I've never seen two people break up or get divorced and agree on what happened,
Yeah.
you know? So knowing that's really normal too, but yeah, finding room for your experience is really important, and letting it be, have all the anger, resentment, sadness, sorrow, fear, anxiety, you know. That was one point, actually. I'm sorry, and I'm kind of going on a little bit, but you're helping me remember other points. But that's the other thing I was going to say in my notes that I forgot to say is that grief is not, we say grief as if we know what that always means. But to me, that it's this umbrella that really encompasses a number of feelings, like emptiness and fear and loneliness and anger and sorrow and bereftness. And, you know, I mean, it's, we say it like it's one feeling, but my experience is it's like a myriad of feelings. And grief is what describes the myriad, and it can change at different times. It feels, a lot of people describe it as a roller coaster.
You reminded me of something too, if I can hop in,
Yes.
of, grief. One of my mentors says that all of our internal journey work is grief. And she explains that as it's coming to peace with how you thought it would be and how it is.
That's right.
And I'm thinking about also in what you shared or what you asked about past grief, you know, like it's the dreams that you had for your family member. It's the dreams that you had for yourself and your family with that family. It's everything. And it's going to come up over and over again and get triggered, you know, anyway.
No, I think that's a great point. Loss of hopes and dreams is a huge one. And that's true for every loss that we have, if it's, especially if it's a hard one, like death. For sure. Like I thought, if you're estranged, I thought we were going to someday make peace. I thought, you know, if I get divorced, I thought I was going to have security in my retirement. Now I don't know how I'm going to be, you know, I mean, there's, it's a more amorphous one, but it's really helpful to name what are, were your hopes and dreams that also kind of got shattered. And for sure, divorce, you know, yeah, maybe your kids were close and now it feels like now it's going to be a pain to get them all together. It's awkward. And I mean, there can be a zillion, it's very personal.
I thought of something else too, is really full self-expression, you know, like you're going through grief, your family members are going through grief, and it's okay to say something like, wow, I notice you're having a great day. That makes me feel so happy because I've really been missing how it was. And I've actually been, you know, worrying about you. I'm not trying to kick you in the stomach. I've probably told you this line that I say, worrying. This is one of my other mentors taught me. Worrying is like negative prayer. And it's like kicking somebody in the stomach energetically. So in my family, we joke, I'm not kicking you in the stomach, but I've been thinking about you and I've been sending you love and trying not to send you worry and kicks. But, you know, like it's okay to communicate your grief and to not be sort of tiptoeing around like, oh, I don't want to bring it up. You know, that's love. It's just like being fully self-expressed, I think.
And I think that's the exact balance you're trying to hit. Expressing it, sharing it, it, but also not burdening the person, the other you're experiencing this with.
Yeah, exactly.
It's such a balance.
It truly is. And to be forgiving with all of it, you know, that you've never done this before. Nobody's ever actually, like I said, there's no real maps for it. Nobody's ever done it before. So we are going to step in it sometimes, and or other people might say things that are painful for us to hear in our loss, things that don't feel attuned or helpful. Holding the whole thing with a lot of compassion and grace and forgiveness is helpful.
Yeah, that boundary. I'm glad you brought up boundaries. That's a big holiday thing. All these pressures have to go to this house, have to go to that house. And you're thinking about past holidays too. And it's just, it's a lot. It's a whole heck of a lot. And knowing what you need and giving yourself permission to set those boundaries and to give yourself what you need. That's so important.
Yeah. And then, you know, recognize, especially if we have kids, I mean, you can't, kids are kind of that whole, kids become such a focus of the holidays. So that can be a real blessing because it's distracting and it, you know, helps alleviate some of the sorrow because they're not in that place necessarily. Unless they are like children of divorce too. So then they're having their own grief process, which can be just something to be aware of. We struggle with children in grief because we don't like to see kids suffer. And yet that's, again, just trying to make that an okay thing.
You were talking about the holidays specifically earlier, and I was thinking back to last year, and there's no upside to COVID, but last year was very quiet, and my who live in Southern California in the winter did not come home. And so it was like the lightest holidays we've ever had since it was very much just the three of us. And like, you know, we saw my husband's parents a little bit, but, and I was very like, I loved it. And so it Maggie, you had also said like being like, okay, whether it's for grief or just coming out of COVID or whatever we're going through, like, it's okay to say, I don't want to return to this right now. I'm not saying I'm never going to return to holiday parties or whatever community group you're in, but I think that coming out of this, I've sort of tried to say, you know, let's do things that bring us joy, mm-hmm. and be more thoughtful about, you know, whatever it is we're doing, you know, because last year I kind of liked the quiet of it all, you know? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't think you were alone in that. I've heard that from a lot of people. I appreciated it too. It just had a simplicity to it that was really refreshing.
It was. And making new traditions, you know, people are sort of realizing, because of the gift of COVID, the silver lining of COVID is, mm-hmm. oh, I can do what I want and mm-hmm. what really, like you said, Maggie, nourishes me and my family, my closest people that I want to be with.
Yeah.
'Tis the season mm-hmm. for setting boundaries.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Right. It's always a good time, but this is the best one, really, to practice it, yeah.
If you liked this episode, please share it with others. And if you have time, please rate us or leave a comment. If you'd like to give us feedback or request any topics to be covered in future podcasts, we'd love to hear from you at support@womenstrongtogether.com. Big thanks to Jordan Frankly Speaking Schneider for doing our music. Another big thanks to our Women Strong experts for taking the time to share their wisdom with our ladies. If you want to join our supportive community and participate in live interviews like this one in the future, sign up for the Women Strong membership at womenstrongtogether.com. Until next time, this is Dr. Brooke from Women Strong, wishing you health, vitality, and the strength to continue evolving into your best self.